right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of the Crypto 101 podcast. We've got truly a legend in the space joining us today. Maybe I might just go out and say it, maybe my favorite guest. And I'm not just saying that. I think I've said that in the last episode that we did together. But you've been on several times the Crypto 101 podcast, Matt. This is Matt Hogan, who's the CIO of Bitwise. So we're going to bring him on in just a second. I'm going to also say what's up to my trusty compadre, Mr. Brendan Veeman. How are you doing, my man?
Hey, I'm doing good. I am equally as stoked to be able to conduct this today because, man, we're always chatting back and forth about everything that's happening with the Bitcoin ETFs and the potential Ethereum ETFs, just everything that's going on in that space because, man, it has been such a smashing success. There's so much data to unpack, and what better way to do that? Yeah. And to bring on someone like Matt.
I'm really excited. It almost feels like a little bit like a lot of the stuff that we talk about on the podcast, like we learn from Matt's Twitter. A lot of things that I think everybody in the space really is like digesting. Like he's like the primary source and everybody else is just kind of like learning from him. No, Matt, we're excited to have you on. Welcome to the show. Welcome back.
You guys are too nice. I think you're the legends, not me, but I appreciate the kind words and really excited to be here and unpack some of that Twitter commentary that I've been throwing out there.
Yeah, you've been on the road. I mean, I think you just got back. You've been on the road for 20 days or something, and you've just been hitting the ground running. We want to hear from the horse's mouth. Tell us about that trip. What was it? Because I think a lot of people know about your background as, former CEO of ETF.com. They know about your background as the chief investment officer of Bitwise. If you guys don't, please listen to some of the other episodes that we've done with Matt. So we actually want to know what is happening now. Your boots on the ground. You are in the battle of your life, basically, getting financial advisors, pension funds, mutual funds, just all these people across the world, getting them interested in the Bitcoin, specifically the Bitwise ETF. So tell us about this trip.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. It's been a phenomenal trip, an inspiring trip. 20 days on the road. It was a mix of speaking at conferences. As an example, I spoke at the Barron's Top RIA Conference. That's the 100 largest and most important registered investment advisors. I got on the main stage there and spent an hour talking to them about Bitcoin. I was in Colorado. I was in Miami. I even made a trip to London. And basically, I wanted to do two things. One, I wanted to advance the case, of course, for Bitcoin and for Bitwise's ETF, BITB. But two, I wanted to see how financial professionals are thinking about Bitcoin, right? We're 2 months in. Are they adopting it in mass? Are they doing it all at once? Is it only retail investors and non-professional investors? And I'll give you three quick takeaways, and then we can unpack them. The first is it's not just retail. I met financial advisors. I met with some of the most sophisticated family offices in the world, people who control $50, $100 billion. I met with institutional consultants. I met with wirehouse advisors and executives, firms like Morgan Stanley, Wells Fargo, et cetera. And they are adopting Bitcoin, not all at once, but they are adopting Bitcoin. They're some of the people who are purchasing our ETF. So it's not only retail. The second big takeaway, and I tweeted this out, is that 3% is the new 1%. So to unpack that, Bitwise has been serving this community of professional investors for almost 7 years. And for those 7 years, the message was get off zero. Allocate something. Maybe allocate 1% of your portfolio. We almost said it sort of sheepishly, like what could go wrong? You could lose 1% of your wealth if it goes to zero. At least do that. Now, people are saying 3% or 5%. I heard those two numbers much more than 1%. Again, not everyone's allocating, but if they are, they're talking about 3% or they're talking about 5%. And then the last thing that I really realized coming off of this trip is that the inflows we've seen into these ETFs over the first 2 months, which have been incredible, fastest growing ETFs of all time, those are going to continue, not in a straight line, but they're going to continue for multiple years. And the reason I say this is I just increasingly realized that there are all these secondary decisions that have to happen, right? We waited for 10 years for the SEC to approve an ETF, and we celebrated. But now we need Morgan Stanley to approve ETF and UBS. and Wells Fargo and Raymond James and all these other platforms that control trillions of dollars of wealth. And they're not all going to do it at once. That was the takeaway. Some are going to do it in May or June, and some are going to do it in January of next year. And so I think we have many quarters of very strong inflows. I left the trip more bullish than I began, a little bit tired, maybe a little bit worse for wear, but it was an inspiring trip.
Man, I love that. And that, I think that's a really important sort of reminder. A lot of people think, oh, well, you know, man, we just had such, you know, the Bitcoin ETF was such a smashing success, but it's going to die down. It's going to die down. You know, it's always big in the beginning. And it's like, this, we just flipped one switch, but we have like all those other switches to keep flipping. Like you mentioned, SEC was just the first domino, and it's a really, really, really long domino sort of circle with a lot more to follow. And yeah, it's really encouraging to hear that from you. What do you think has surprised you most about this Bitcoin ETF success? Is it like the amount of initial inflows? Is it something else? What's just most surprising?
That's a great question. Two things jump into my mind. One is the amount of initial inflows. I mean, I knew it was going to be successful, but this is so far off the charts, it's hard to believe. Bitwise's ETF, in my view, is the best Bitcoin ETF, but it's not the only Bitcoin ETF. It's not even the largest. And we're growing faster than the gold ETF grew when it launched. We're actually the eighth fastest growing ETF of all time. So this is off the charts.
Out of like 10,000 ETFs that have ever been launched.
That's exactly right. Yes.
That's crazy.
It's unbelievable. So the size of the flows really has surprised me. And then the other thing is maybe more nuanced, which is, you know, like many of us, I spent 6 years fighting all sorts of familiar FUD.
Yep.
Criminal use FUD, energy use FUD, Tether FUD, Craig Wright FUD, all of that have faded away. I actually got zero questions about those things. And people seem to have made this like overnight shift that Bitcoin's not going away. And if Bitcoin's not going away, those aren't the questions that matter. The questions that matter are now 1%, 3%, or 5%. The questions that matter are, should I rebalance or just buy and let it ride? The questions that matter are, which ETF do I choose? And I was just surprised by how much the FUD, which occupied so much of our lives for so many years, just has been sort of kicked to the side, like no longer relevant. Now we're in ETF land. Now BlackRock is here. Let's talk about different, more exciting questions. It's been a sea change. It's really, really interesting.
Hey guys, TiVo here to tell you about the Eufy Video Lock, a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell all in one. That's right, 3-in-1 for triple the security. It's easy to install. All you need is a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. It gives you keyless entry, so no more fumbling your keys when you have your hands full coming back from the grocery store. No more worry about the kids losing a house key. No more worry about a guest losing the house key or forgetting the passcode on your door. And for Airbnbers, it's a no-brainer as you can change the passcode at will between renters. It has available fingerprint recognition, and it has AI self-learning chip, so the more you use it, the more accurate it's going to be. You will have no anxiety with the battery charging. It is a rechargeable battery, and it lasts around 4 months, but don't worry, when it's low, it'll give you plenty of weeks' notice, and also, it always comes with a physical key as a backup. There's no monthly fee. Unlike other brands that charge you a monthly fee to get your backup recordings, they're always recorded locally and you will always have access. Customer support for the Eufy Video Lock is 24/7, so you don't have to worry about any issues you have, and it comes with an 18-month warranty. What I love about this product is it's truly all-in-one with the 3-in-1. You don't have to go out and buy multiple parts. It's all in this package with the Eufy Video Lock. So if you're interested in learning more, go on Amazon and search Eufy Video Lock. That's EUFY Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock. Again, that's EUFY Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock. Get complete control over your front door.
And you know, in those conversations, do you refer people back to the paper that you wrote for the CFA, which I'm blanking on the name. Hopefully, you can remind me. But I read a big portion of it. I mean, it was a lot. But what the crux of it, from what I understood, was basically, you know, there's statistical analysis that you could show by even just adding 1% of a classic 60-40 portfolio. Adding 1% Bitcoin could enhance returns by, I don't know, 20% or something. I don't want to butcher it. But can you tell us, like, is that a resource that you, are people interested in that now? And what actually is the unbutchered version of all your findings?
Yeah, no. You did a good job. That's absolutely a resource. And, you know, that was the first maybe professional publication on crypto in a portfolio. And we've updated it since. But that open people's minds. And now that they accept Bitcoin is going to be here, they're willing to engage with it on that basis. I think the really interesting thing from that study, which looked at what happens if you add 1, 3, and 5% Bitcoin to a traditional stock and bond portfolio, looking at all the different time periods that have existed, it never surprises people that Bitcoin boosted returns because it's the best performing asset of all time. Of course, if you sprinkle it in, it will boost returns. What that study showed is that it boosted returns without significantly boosting your volatility. And that's where people's brains break. Because Bitcoin, of course, is very volatile, bounces around a lot. But it does a different thing than stocks and bonds. So you add it to a portfolio, it boosts your returns, but your volatility stays flat. And that's like magic to institutional investors, right? That is the holy grail that they're looking for. And at least historically, that's what Bitcoin has delivered. And then I spend a lot of time talking to investors about why I think that will continue into the future.
Love it. So what are your revised expectations now for inflows, right? Because now we have a couple months of data to kind of look at and analyze, and things have kind of been off the charts. But
yeah, I mean, great question. You know, look, I think we could get to $50 billion in inflows this year, which is outrageous. To put that in context,
12 or so?
Now we're about 12, 13. Okay. Yeah. And just so
we can do another like 5X almost.
Yeah. Yeah. And just to contextualize how crazy that is, before this ETF launched, the fastest growing ETF of all time in its first year was the Qs, NASDAQ 100 Qs, invested in NASDAQ technology stocks. And it brought in $5 billion in its first year. I'm saying that these ETFs could do 10x that. And the reason for that is what we mentioned earlier, which is not all these faucets are even on.
Right.
And because I think they'll turn on, and because I'm also optimistic of the price going into the halving, yeah, I think it could be $50 billion, which is incredible. And I don't think we'll stop there. I think year two could be even bigger. You know, look, if you zoom out, wealth managers globally control $100 trillion of wealth. What's 1% of $100 trillion? It's $1 trillion. We've gotten $10 billion in. That's 1% of $1 trillion. It's great. We should be excited, but there are miles to go. So yeah, the answer, I think we could get to $50 billion this year, which would be incredible, but I don't think it's impossible.
And like, you know, even with the halving, I've seen, you know, some people from your team that are talking about 10x the amount of Bitcoin is being bought in just by these ETFs than is being mined. 10x, it fluctuates. Some days it's 3x or 12x or whatever. But then after the halving, as people who are listening are probably familiar with, the halving is when Bitcoin's supply schedule kind of gets cut in half. So instead of 900 Bitcoin being mined a day, it's 450. And then you take a look at the math with how many Bitcoin the ETFs are buying, and then it's like, oh my God, it's going to be 30 times the amount of daily demand by just one participant, just these ETFs, this blob, versus the available supply. Mm-hmm. So then my question is like, you know, where does the supply come from? Who's going to be selling? And the only answer is that the price has to adjust higher in order for supply to be incentivized to meet this demand. How do you think about that? There's no Bitcoin around here.
That's exactly right. Yeah, people say there's not enough Bitcoin, which I totally basically agree with.
But everybody has their price. You know, so it's like,
no, I think that's right. Look, if you think about the Bitcoin market holistically, you have new Bitcoin being created by miners that has to be sold. And right now, as you mentioned, the ETFs are buying up 2x, 3x, 4x, 5x, 10x that. So the only thing that can happen is the price has to go up until long-term holders agree to sell. Now, it shouldn't be surprising to us that we've hit resistance at the all-time high. Think about from a behavioral perspective. If you've been a long-term investor, you're probably holding out for all-time highs and then you're willing to sell. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't surprise me similarly from a behavioral perspective if we hit a wall at 100 grand. If you're a long-term investor, you might have said, I'll sell some Bitcoin when it gets to $100,000. We're all humans. Like, those numbers do have a factor. Mm-hmm. Above that, I don't know where people sell. But yeah, absolutely. You know, the price will rise until people are willing to sell. And as long as this ETF demand is right, and I could be wrong, you know, the ETF demand could dry up. It could reverse. I actually do expect at some point there will be days where there are outflows from these ETFs. That's normal. That's what happens. But if we see consistent ETF demand and the halving, you know, will happen. Yeah, I think you're going to see price ratchet up until you can shake Bitcoin out of the hodler's hands.
Yeah, I'm with you. And also, yeah, full disclosure, we should have said this at the beginning. Everybody could always be wrong. We don't know the future. None of this is investment advice. We are not your financial advisors. Do your own research.
100%. Right.
That's sorry, right. Brendan, to cut you off. I know you were cooking up something good there. I saw your face.
Oh, no, all good. All good. You know, I think what this does is this adds validation out there for the people who might have been on the fence. They've seen how the ETFs have performed. They've seen the players who are in the space being reasonable and, you know, regulated, and they behave well. And this gives them validation, because now what you said, and I'm kind of looking at your three points that you gave us from earlier, saying it's not just retail. There's institutions involved with this, people who have really great reputations like yourselves, like BlackRock, like Fidelity, that people are already accustomed to. And those very same players are now saying, hey, where it used to be, have 0% allocation to this stuff. Then they started saying, okay, well, maybe you can allocate 1%. And now we're at the place where they're saying allocate 3-5% of your portfolios to something like these Bitcoin ETFs. And again, I think what this has done is give validation to the space as a whole and to the people who are on the fence, and maybe even a step further, maybe beyond the people that were just on the fence, the people who were anti-crypto and being like, I don't want to touch this stuff. Well, now, you know, they might walk into their annual meeting with their financial advisor, and he's the one sitting them down at Fidelity saying, you need exposure to this, and I think it would be good. So yeah, it's wild how far we've come.
That's exactly right. I think validation is a very good term. I mean, you back up 2 years ago, and if you were outside the crypto industry, you would have Jamie Dimon saying it's a pet rock. And you would have Sam Bankman-Fried saying it's going to a million. And that's an unfair fight if you're a traditional finance person, rightfully so. Mm-hmm. Today, you still have Jamie Dimon. But on the other side, the CEO of JP Morgan, on the other side, you have Larry Fink, CEO of BlackRock, the largest asset manager in the world. And he's saying this is an important part of the future. It could be the most valuable currency of all time. It's a store of value. And that provides a balance to someone who hasn't approached crypto. It would be easy to dismiss it if the only person you trust was anti-crypto. But now in the TradFi world, you have this equal representation of people who are skeptical of the asset and people who are strongly bullish on the asset. And that means people have to make up their own minds, and some of them are breaking towards Bitcoin. It's pretty fun.
I don't want to speak for you, but is this the coolest moment in your career, would you say?
Definitely. This is
what a wild time.
This has been amazing. Yeah, I you know, we were at this for 5+ years at Bitwise trying to launch a Bitcoin ETF. And after the first day, I tweeted, yeah, it's worth it. And it has been worth it. It's just been, you know, when you believe in what this asset class can do for portfolios and for the world, to see people finally recognizing that and to see a clear path on the next few years of where this thing is going. It's just tremendously fun. And that keeps me going even when I'm on the road for 20 straight days.
Yeah. And I mean, even what's so cool about like what you guys are doing, it's not just like money. Like, sure, like Bitwise is going to be making a lot of money from this. But also for, correct me on the exact things, the percentages, but I think a portion of every profit earned is given back to Bitcoin developers. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah. 10% of the gross profits of our ETF go straight back to Bitcoin core developers. That's
yeah. Right. And so buying the Bitwise ETF, which is competitively priced to all the other ETFs in terms of management fees, you're doing You know, you're doing the Lord's work. You're doing Satoshi's work by helping, you know, maintain it, because software is run by people, and people run on money, basically. And so you got to make sure to continue to incentivize good development. And it's so aligned, because it's like, you know, you're buying into, you know, this asset class, and it also helps to propel it. So I love what you guys did there. That's super unique in the marketplace.
Well, thank you. Yeah. I mean, we think of ourselves as standing on the shoulders of giants. Some of those giants are those Bitcoin core devs, and, you know, they're funded by donations. That's totally just the way this thing works. And so we were really pleased to be able to do that. And I know it means it helps some people decide which ETF to allocate to. We're also pleased to be the first ETF to disclose our Bitcoin address. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to rely on KPMG, which is our auditor, a great auditor. But you don't have to rely on that. You can check yourself. So you can go to our Bitcoin addresses and see exactly the Bitcoin we hold. We care about the crypto ecosystem, and we're trying to express that through the products that we launch.
It's so crystal clear, like, to me as a guy who was never in the TradFi or traditional financial world, crypto native, seeing you guys is really inspiring. You know, I remember when you were launching this, I think I asked you, well, you know, what sets you apart from, you know, BlackRock? Like, why should somebody, you know, buy this? And you're like, well, don't you want to buy an ETF from crypto experts? Like, BlackRock is basically just getting into the crypto asset management space. We're all crypto experts at Bitwise. Like, you know, we're going to make the best products. And it's clear just by the finesse of those little things, right? Like putting the addresses on chain, don't trust, verify. Like, boom, that resonates with a guy like me and all of our listeners. The giving back, like, there's just a lot of cool things that you guys do. So super stoked on that. And
Appreciate it.
And you guys aren't stopping, because the Bitcoin ETF was one product, and we always want to get your thoughts on the Ethereum ETF, or potentially even any other altcoin ETFs.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Bitwise has a filing for an Ethereum ETF now, so I can't speak to the filing or our application, but I can speak to Ethereum ETFs in general.
Okay.
There's my legal disclaimer.
Perfect.
look, we've entered the ETF era of crypto. So it is truly a matter of when and not if on something particularly like Ethereum. I think the legal argument in support of an Ethereum ETF is very strong. There are already Ethereum futures ETFs, and Ethereum futures are highly correlated with Ethereum itself. That's the same argument that won the Bitcoin battle and got us Bitcoin ETFs. Eventually, I think it's going to win the Ethereum battle and get us Ethereum ETFs. A big question in the market is, will it occur in May? May is the date the SEC has to respond to the first Bitcoin ETF application. I think Bloomberg puts the odds of that at 25% for approval. That strikes me as about right. It seems unlikely, because you're not seeing the SEC and issuers go back and forth with filing updates. It's just not pattern matching to what you see prior to approval. But I wouldn't take a delay there as anything but that.
I think about like how you just said, it should be the same thing as the Bitcoin ETF. Mm-hmm. So to your point right there about, well, we haven't seen any back and forth. Well, didn't they already do all that with the Bitcoin ETF? It's all the same, right? And, you know, maybe it's going to be a huge surprise.
Yeah, I think that's a good argument. And I think that's important to keep in mind. Yeah. It's also important to keep in mind that 25% is 1 in 4, right? NC State just plowed its way into the Final Four.
Damn right.
They had a much lower than a 1 in 4 chance at the start of this tournament. And look, they're there now. So 1 in 4 doesn't mean it's not going to happen.
Totally.
It just means, you know, maybe it's not likely, but I think that would be a huge surprise. I have said, and I'll stand by this, that I think Ethereum ETFs will gather more assets if they launch later, if they launch in December, than if they launch in May. I think the market I deal with is still digesting Bitcoin ETFs. We still haven't gotten those two approvals. They're still figuring out this space. I think, you know, let them cook, give them a little bit of time.
Yeah.
And then I think if we get it at the end of the year, that will be great. But either way is a win. And I think it's going to happen. I'll add, other altcoins will take longer because there aren't regulated futures markets. Eventually we'll get there, but we'll need new legislation or new futures markets to launch. We'll get there, but those are longer out. But Bitcoin and ETH, they should exist in ETF format. And I think that they will.
You know, what do you think that the ETH inflows will look like in their first 3 months compared to Bitcoin? Because we're now kind of reaching that point where the Bitcoin ETFs have been around for just about 3 months now. What do you think the Ethereum ones will be like?
Yeah, it's a great question. The short answer is I don't know. And I sort of struggle to evaluate it. On the one side,
yeah,
you have the experience with the Ethereum futures ETFs, which launched and didn't gather much in the way of assets. Mm-hmm. On the flip side, you have the fact that traditional finance professionals sort of like Ethereum better than Bitcoin sometimes because they like its real world use cases and its cash flow. And I have a hard time weighing those things, but it's going to be a fraction of the flows we've seen into Bitcoin. It's not as big an asset. Could they get $1 billion in the first month? You know, probably. Will they get 10? Probably not. We'll see.
You know, I'm curious if I have a flawed approach here and my kind of way of looking at it and thinking about it. But the way that I view it is I agree. I don't think it's going to have the same level of inflows in terms of sheer dollar amount. But I also think that it doesn't necessarily have to because it's a significantly smaller project in terms of market capitalization. So you look at the size of Ethereum compared to the size of Bitcoin, and Bitcoin obviously has a lot more in market cap. So, you know, we could maybe see a similar price appreciation in the same way that Bitcoin just took off from 30K to 70K with less money flowing into the Ethereum ETFs. And it wouldn't mean that the Ethereum ETFs were a failure or a letdown or anything like that. It's just saying, hey, this is a smaller market, a smaller project. And so even if the Ethereum ETFs got maybe even a fraction of what the Bitcoin ETFs got, it could still heavily impact price in a positive way. And so is that kind of like the right way to think about this?
I think that's a great way to think of it. And I'll add one more nuance that maybe I haven't seen discussed in the media, which is there's a reasonable chance that Ethereum ETFs will launch without staking, right? They'll launch with no staking. Mm. And so it could be that they have a halo effect. In other words, the launch of an ETF makes Ethereum an investable asset by professional investors, but some of those investors may choose to take a direct approach so that they can stake their ETH. And that wouldn't show up in the ETF flows, but it would still be sort of driven by the launch of ETFs by creating this halo effect around the space. So I think it'll be very positive for price. I think it'll clear up some regulatory uncertainty if it happens. I think it will attract flows. And as you mentioned, it's a much smaller asset. So even if it's not $10 billion, I think it'll still be a big deal.
Yeah. And also just like with the staking stuff, I mean, for people at home, they're like, oh, maybe what is that or why is that useful? But think about just being able to get like an automatic dividend in, you know, on your Bitcoin ETF. Like that would be super cool. And having, you know, maybe even have it auto compound, right? But since Bitcoin's proof of work, Ethereum's proof of stake, well, you can do that in proof of stake. But then people are kind of saying, well, maybe that's too security-like. So who knows? I'm definitely not a lawyer. Matt, are you a lawyer?
I'm not a lawyer, but
do you
summed it up.
Legal advice publicly?
No legal advice, but you summed it up.
Yeah,
it's gonna be you summed it up well. Yeah.
But I'm also curious. If we want to tie the knot on the Bitcoin ETF and any ETF discussion, anything we left out, but that's not all Bitwise does. You guys have a whole host of other business. You know, it's not like you guys are just a Bitcoin ETF issuer. You guys have like many other products that are very much worth discussing. So anything we want to say on that before moving on?
No, you did a good job. I would just encourage people to think in multiple years. I'd add one more fun fact from my ETF background. You know, the gold ETF, people got very excited in year one, but actually inflows were higher in year two, and then higher in year three, and then higher in year four, and all the way up to year seven, 7 years of ascending inflows. I don't know that we'll have the same thing in Bitcoin. It could be shorter, but it's going to compound over time. Year two will be bigger than year one. Year three will probably be bigger than year two is my gut on this.
I like that.
Do you think that's because people are like waiting to feel the waters? You know, maybe they have this idea ingrained into their head of the past and people looking at Bitcoin being like volatile and more of like a risky asset. And so do you think that like that is the thought process behind this of people saying, okay, let's give these ETFs a year of being around, feel out the waters, and then they go, oh, okay, you know, You know, I can actually dip my feet into the water now.
Check the liquidity, the spread, the vault. Like, there's things so much that, like, you can't really, like, if you're a pension fund or one of these massive advisors, you can't just read something, an S1 or some paper and be like, yeah, we'll offer that. Like, you actually have to probably see how it trades and, like, what are the actual market dynamics and are all the participants solvent and, like, all that kind of stuff for a year or two before. I mean, I think about how slow I move when I'm just moving my money. Think about a $1 trillion advisor. Like, they think in terms of, you know, decades on their decisions. And, you know, it's just so crazy, like, the mindset of, like, those allocators.
It's absolutely right. These are super tankers and not speedboats. It takes them it takes them a quarter to organize a meeting.
Yeah.
And I don't mean that derisively. Like, that's actually true. They launch and then they take a quarter, they decide to meet, and then they decide to write a white paper on it and they study it for 6 months, which sounds ridiculous to us in crypto. But again, as you mentioned, if you're investing for the next 100 years, you know, this month, next month, it's all the same, right? You still have 100 years to go. So yeah, it is fun to watch, and they do move on very different timeframes than what we're used to in crypto.
Yeah. It's a thing of beauty. Seeing all the minds shift. You know, Easter was recently, having conversations with family and friends, and, you know, people, you know, warming up to crypto now that it's now they're seeing it in their brokerage account. And one of these family friends was talking to me about MicroStrategy and how it's, you know, the best thing since sliced bread and stuff. So I'm like, oh wow, like, all right, people are really here now.
That's right.
It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, it's fun to watch.
But I want to know, you know, outside of the Bitcoin ETF, I know you guys have many other products. Could you tell us about some of the other stuff that Bitwise is working on?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, we have about 19 different products in the field that serve a variety of different investors. Probably the most directly interesting one to most people, we have a crypto index fund called the Bitwise 10. It's available as a ticker BITW, although it can trade to premiums and discounts, which is important for people to understand. And it's also available to accredited investors as a standalone fund product. Hmm. The beauty of the index approach is, you know, Bitcoin's very exciting, Ethereum's very exciting, but there are a lot of exciting assets. So it just holds the top 10 assets, screening out assets with risks. And that's been a very successful product for us. But our goal is to build high quality products wherever people want to invest in crypto. So we have a DeFi index fund. We have an NFT index fund. We have a fund that holds everything except for Bitcoin amongst the large caps. We have an active sort of hedge fund of funds strategy group. Wherever there is interest, and there's a lot of interest, we're looking to build products. And, you know, we have some products that we're thinking about for the future as well. So it's fun.
I love it. In terms of, like, different altcoins and ecosystems, as you're on the road, do you hear certain names getting tossed around in those institutional settings? You know, I know Ethereum is probably always, you know, second, or, you know, it's Bitcoin and then Ethereum. But, like, do people, like, think about all, like, what, one of these guys at Easter, he goes, yeah, there's a lot of, like, hanky panky going around in crypto land still. I'm like, it's like, there's, yes, the meme coins and there's all that kind of stuff, but there's, like, a lot of legit projects, and communities and stuff. Do any of those get floated, while you're doing these road shows?
100%. Yeah. Amongst more sophisticated crypto investors, there are a bunch of categories that people have been chatting about. A lot of people wanted to talk about Solana and Ethereum, obviously. A lot of people wanted to talk about layer twos. There's a lot of excitement around layer twos, both in Ethereum and in Bitcoin. I know it's hard to imagine traditional finance people knowing about layer twos, but there's always, at most big shops, somebody who really cares about crypto. And they were very eager to talk about that space. And then there are some people who are interested in some of the more experimental DePIN assets, whether that's Render or Helium or Hive Mapper, trying to think of other ones that came up. But that sort of class of DePIN does seem to have early stage traction amongst this group, in part because it's a real world use case. You know, you can have a Helium phone.
You could model out the revenues. You could build, like, actual valuation models that are, you know, not just on paper, on thin air.
That's exactly right. You know, everyone knows what Waze is, and they can imagine what HiveMapper's business model looks like. So amongst people who have dove down and actually evaluated, I do find the deep pin narrative gaining a little bit of traction.
That's a hot take. That's a very hot take. Also, one of the things that I think is getting a lot of traction just from doing the podcast and speaking with a bunch of other people, real world assets like RWAs with, you know, MakerDAO or these kinds of things. I think one of the main pushes in the recent days and sort of, I guess, recent 2 weeks or so is because Larry Fink, BlackRock, they came out with the BIDL fund, the BlackRock US dollar institutional liquidity fund. I think they've got about $250 or $300 million in this thing. Did you hear about this? Could you talk about it? Do you guys have anything like this? What is it?
100%. I've heard about this. Yeah, this is taking traditional assets and putting them online, you know, either to serve a crypto native audience or to serve investors from TradFi who would rather have their funds trade 24/7, 365 than 9:30 to 4 and a half days a week. I mean, yeah, people talk about why we need tokenization. Just think about that. You know, these ETFs, I love ETFs. ETFs don't even trade banker's hours. They trade like senior banker's hours. And many people want more exposure. I'll say what I found the most interesting thing about BlackRock's move, which is, I think, maybe a little bit underreported, is that they built it on Ethereum.
Right.
If you go back 2 years, 4 years, that would have been built on a private blockchain. It was all private blockchains. It was all Hyperledger. It was all, you know, this obscure blockchain you've never heard of. Now it's on a public blockchain. It's built on Ethereum. To me, that says a huge amount about what's changed in crypto. We've gone from blockchain, not crypto, to blockchain is crypto. And the largest institutions are now building on Ethereum. I think that's a sea change. And so that was my favorite part of that announcement. And I suspect that's what we'll see going forward. I think private blockchains will be something that we sort of look back on, like we look back on corporate intranets,
right?
As like, oh, that's cute. But the magic is in public blockchain. So I think that was a big deal.
Yeah, it's the private blockchain is oxymoronic at best.
Yes. Yeah, that is right. Yeah. The core value of a blockchain is it's decentralized. So let's centralize it and then be surprised when it doesn't work.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, but it took the industry, you know, 10 years to get over that. And I think this is the signal moment that narrative has been retired. We're now in a public blockchain world.
So do you think that this sets the standard moving forward? So like if other funds or providers or anyone else wants to do something similar like this, and again, I would assume that they do, because oftentimes the largest asset manager on the planet tends to set the standard for these kind of things. And so in that same approach, do you see other groups, you know, maybe that is Fidelity, maybe that's someone else doing something similar to BIDL, but also using Ethereum as the mainnet instead of their own private blockchain or maybe someone else?
Yeah, 100%. 100% for two reasons. One, it's not that easy to snap your fingers and gather a couple $100 million of assets, right? Other asset managers noted that. And that's a real success. And, you know, they will look at that and want to do the same thing. And then you mentioned, will they do it on Ethereum? Absolutely. And the reason for that is, you know, now all the people who have interacted with BIDL have due diligence to the Ethereum blockchain and feel comfortable on it. BlackRock has removed the career risk, right? If you're a product developer at large asset manager and you say, I want to build a product on Ethereum like BlackRock, you're not putting your neck on the line. If you say, I want to build it on asset number 35, they're going to want to see if your cousin works for the foundation or something, right? You're going to make an odd choice. So these advantages compound. And, you know, I don't think it'll be all Ethereum. I think people will build on Solana and maybe other few chains as well. But you're going to see Ethereum take its leadership position and build on it as a result of this BlackRock action.
It's just so funny because, like, I tweeted the other day, I was like, you're selling. BlackRock is literally in the order books and you're selling. Like, you know, it's just crazy because it's a paradigm shift in a sense of market psychology, just like you outlined perfectly. There's no career risk. You know, you're following in the footsteps of like the wave makers in traditional finance. And it really sets that trend, right? Prices are people. Prices are the perception of people, like all that kind of stuff. And at the end of the day, you know, like when BlackRock's doing it, and they're setting that new long-term trend, those new long-term holders, you know, maybe that volatility that crypto's been notorious for, you know, Bitcoin, 100 vol annualized asset or whatever, maybe that does come down because you just have that, you know, constant bid from not only just, you know, people actually in the order books, but just that in the back of your mind there, you know, if there are sharp dips, people now view that as an opportunity, a quick correction. Let's, you know, buy the dip. Because you know, that's, you know, maybe as deep as it's going to go. And like, there's just a whole psychological shift that I think is going to sustain higher for longer, except Bitcoin prices, not just interest rates and inflation.
I think that's exactly right. Yeah. And I think people will increasingly zoom out and take that multi-year perspective. You know,
yeah.
Where's Bitcoin going to go next week? I have no idea. But if you zoom out, like, where's it going to go in the next 5 or 10 years? I have pretty high conviction on that.
Yeah. I couldn't agree more. Well, you know, not to you know, make you do any short term predictions, because nobody knows. But you know, Brendan was asking me earlier. He's like, I wonder what, you know, if he has any bold predictions just for the end of the year. And and you shared $50 billion, $50 billion of inflows. That's a pretty bold prediction. But can we squeeze any more out of you?
That's a pretty bold prediction, and I hope that I'm right on that one. We'll have to see. You know, look, I think. My base case is that Bitcoin's going to challenge $100,000, and I suspect there's enough sustained ETF demand to get through that. And then above that, I don't know where it goes, so I don't have a price prediction above that. But I think there's a good chance that we hit six-digit Bitcoin this year. Of course, I could be wrong. ETF flows could reverse. I particularly think there could be a lull in ETF flows in the relative near term as we wait for these big platforms to turn on. So I do think there's a possibility of a lull. But I think if I'm right, the stars are aligning for Bitcoin to break above 100K. And I don't know where it stops after that.
I like it. I like it, man. Gives me goosebumps.
Bryce.
Yeah, go for it.
Bryce, what would it have been like if I were to come on the pod a couple of years ago when you were starting and I said, you know what? By the first quarter of 2024, BlackRock is going to be buying Bitcoin. There's going to be ETFs everywhere. Ethereum's going to be the next in line. They have a fund for RWA and tokenization building on Ethereum. Like, what would your response to me have been?
I would have said, you're crazy. Go put your resume somewhere else, kid. You know, we don't have space for dreamers like that. It's never going to happen. Here we are.
I love that. So true. Exactly. And now just imagine where we are in a few years. It's even more exciting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
We always underestimate where we can go in the long term.
That's exactly right.
Overestimate where we can go in the short term. Matt, anything else that we missed? You know, this was a ton of fun. I know you've got probably a million meetings and all sorts of crazy stuff. We're probably going to see you on CNBC or Fox Business next week. Who knows? You know, anything else that we forgot to ask or failed to mention?
No, I think you all did a great job. These are great questions. And just know that the professional investors are coming, not all at once, not instantaneously. But yeah, thinking of it as this super tanker of $100 trillion in value that's starting to eye Bitcoin is a good way of framing it. And yeah, it'll be fun to touch base at the end of the year and see how my predictions came in.
Hey, we're going to mark it on the calendar. I promise you that. But a couple closing questions, just because it gives us a little color into who you are, what makes you tick. Out of everybody you kind of have come across in crypto, on the road, whatever, is there any one person you want to give a shout out to that inspired you, inspired the way you think, maybe the way you make investment decisions, inspired you to, you know, pitch differently, anything that has kind of just made you better?
Yeah, I'll throw out two. One, self-serving, which is Hong Kim, who's the CTO and co-founder here at Bitwise.
Awesome.
dramatically underfollowed, but he's one of the smartest minds in Bitcoin. And he's actually behind a lot of the work that we do with the Bitcoin community. So Hong Kim is absolutely incredible. And then a posthumous shout out to Kathleen Moriarty, who was the first person who made me take Bitcoin seriously. She was the lawyer on the first ETF in the US, and then also the original lawyer on the first Bitcoin ETF application. And she's just a hero of mine. So Kathleen Moriarty and Hong Kim.
Two incredible shout outs. I agree. Hong is definitely worth a follow on Twitter. Always dropping good stuff here and there. But also outside of Bitwise, outside of any affiliates or things that maybe you're invested in, or unless disclose that, but like what's one high impact company that you have your eye on that is just impressing you, that you think is, you know, at least worth people to run a quick Google search and check out, whether it is, you know, a vendor or, you know,
yeah,
whatever.
I mean, there's so many. I think BlackRock is having a huge impact. Obviously, Coinbase is having a huge impact. Further down the chain, you know, we talked about tokenization. Mm-hmm. I have my eye on Ondo Finance. I think what they're doing is incredibly interesting, and they're executing very well. So we're fortunate to be in a world with a lot of high value companies doing interesting things. But yeah, check out Ondo. I mean, I have no affiliation. I just admire the work they're doing. Just like Bitwise is sort of bringing asset management with a crypto native spin, they're moving tokenization forward with a crypto native spin, and I think it's great to see.
Love it. Incredible. Matt, thank you so much for your time today. Where can people find more? Follow you, website. We'll link it all in the show notes for listeners who aren't already connected.
100%. Bitwiseinvestments.com. You can access my CIO memos there and information about the products. And then follow me on Twitter, which is Matt_Hogan. Hogan has a U in it, H-O-U-G-A-N. So apologies for the misspelled last name, but that's the reality of my life. So Matt_Hogan is where you'll find me.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. Everybody at home listening, we cherish your attention and your time. Thank you for joining us as well for another episode of the Crypto 101 podcast. We'll catch you guys back same time, same place next week.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.